Hello, everyone, and welcome to Uncork the Sun with the Vinstitute Wine School. I'm your host, Mosher Kogel, and I won't bother mocking my name in the intro today because I feel like there's probably going to be a self-deprecating insult somewhere within the first 30 seconds of audio anyway. I hope everyone's enjoying these occasional interviews that I've been slipping in from time to time as a little break from the pure single-mic exposition that I usually provide. Today, I have for you an interview with winemaker Andrew Windsor. If you're the sort of person who knows the names of people in the Okanagan wine industry, real names, I mean, not just the made-up baloney that I go by, then Andrews is a name that you might recognize. What's interesting is that last year, you probably would have known him for something quite different than this year. Last year, Andrew would have been known as the winemaker of Tinhorn Creek, brought on in 2014 when the previous Tinhorn winemaker, that's Sandra Oldfield, when she stepped back to take an executive position at the winery. Andrew was an exciting addition to the team. He did a good job of maintaining continuity in the brand. He also brought in some fresh insight and kind of a personal flair to the already excellent portfolio of wines that Tinhorn has. But if you've heard Andrew's name this year, it's probably because he is one of the gentlemen who recently purchased Maverick Estate Winery. Alongside his business partner Jan Nelson, who is another Tinhorn Creek alumni, previously employed as Tinhorn's sales and marketing manager, this spring the two of them stepped into their roles as Maverick's new proprietors. This is big news for a couple of reasons. It's always good gossip to hear about a winery changing owners. It's always good gossip to hear about a winery changing winemakers. And it's doubly so when the new owner also happens to be the new winemaker, which doesn't actually happen all that often. But this is also big news because of the popularity of the two brands in question. Tinhorn Creek is one of the most well-known and well-established wineries in the province, built through hard work and savvy business acumen by the Oldfields, Sandra and Ken, before being sold to the wine conglomerate Andrew Peller in 2017. But Maverick, while smaller, newer, and more modest than Tinhorn Creek, has also earned a magnificent reputation through the past decade. That, based on the winery's clean branding, eye-catching, angular tasting bar, its well-balanced lineup of consistently excellent wines, and through its sometimes impossibly energetic founder and winemaker. See, if you're not familiar, Maverick was founded in 2013 by the formerly South African winemaker Bertus Albertin and his family. Bertus had gained some experience in the Okanagan by consulting for other wineries and by working as the winemaker of Burrowing Owl before he founded his own small estate vineyard and winery. See, it's always interesting when a winemaker changes properties. Even after he started his own business, where he was serving as both winemaker and vineyard manager, Bertus continued to consult and somehow found time to launch his own brand of cider, start a high-intensity sparkling wine program at Maverick, to sit on the board of directors for the local winery association, and much more. Busy guy. Now, with the very good reputation that Maverick has built up since 2013, I'm sure some people might be concerned, or at the very least, curious to hear about its sale. It is a topic that is always loaded with questions, with biases, and it's not unexpected for fans of the winery to need a little reassurance that the quality of the product isn't going to diminish. So to shed a little bit of light on the new owners and to maybe allay some of those concerns, I present today my interview with Andrew. I recorded this audio in June when the sale of Maverick was still relatively new. You'll hear birds chirping and a very good vineyard doggy rattling her leash a little bit. Andrew was sitting on the porch of the back house on the Maverick property, waiting for a mattress to be delivered. Turns out that when you buy an estate winery, it's not always just a matter of changing where you go to work. Sometimes your whole life moves with it. You want to just say your full name and your official role here?
Sure, yeah. No, my name's Andrew Windsor, and I'm the winemaker here at Maverick Estate Winery as of 8 weeks ago.
Well, Andrew, you haven't just flown into the Okanagan out of nowhere. You've had some experience here. You want to talk a little bit about your history in the Okanagan?
Yeah, sure. My first trip here was actually back in 2010. I'd met some Canadians while I was studying in Australia, and I'd never been really to the Okanagan prior to that. They suggested if I was going to go back and work in Canada that I have a look at the Okanagan. So didn't have a lot of time to sort of make plans of things. My visa kind of got cut short in Australia. I had about 30 days to leave the country. And so I found a job in the Similkameen at a small winery called Oviv. I think we did about 20 tons that year, but if anyone was here in 2010, they'll remember that it was a cold and difficult vintage. I don't think we'd picked anything there until after Halloween. And then we picked everything in about 3 days, and then it snowed. And most of the Oviv winery was actually outside. So,
well, after that first season at Oviv, is that a bit of a harsh introduction to Canada? Did you have doubts about working?
No, because I'd worked in Ontario prior to moving to Australia in 07. So I'd been through, some pretty awesome Ontario vintages and winters, and from suburban Toronto originally anyway. So I was certainly familiar with what I was getting myself into, but having worked in Australia for over 3 years, probably gotten a little complacent in my appreciation for the cooler climate that we do have to deal with here.
But you didn't have doubts about British Columbia?
No. As soon as I left, I didn't know if I was going to be coming back to Canada at that time. But I did very quickly come to the conclusion that if I was going to return to making wine in Canada, it would be in the Okanagan. Mm-hmm. And I did 4 years later.
And was that when you came to Tinhorn Creek? Or?
Yeah, exactly. I moved back to Ontario in late 2012. Took a job with Andrew Peller in Ontario as their VQA winemaker at their large facility in Grimsby. I'd kind of worked a couple of big wineries in the years in between 2010 and 2012.
And now it's 2020, and you are working at Maverick Estate Winery. You've worked at a couple different wineries of different scales, different sizes. What's your optimal size? What do you like best? Do you like working at big wineries? Do you like working at small wineries?
The jobs are all completely different, really. A winemaker's position at a winery that's doing thousands of tons, in the case of New Zealand, like tens of thousands of tons, those jobs are very much different than, say, the 20 tons at Oviv, where you're trying to just get family members or anyone out there to help you, versus 400 or 500 tons at Tinhorn, back to about around 100 tons here at Maverick. At least that's the plan for this 2020 harvest. They're all quite different. I don't know if there is an ideal. I think probably somewhere around 200-250 tons would likely be a good size based on vineyard sizes here. Trying to do small batch winemaking under 100 tons, you end up having to sort of coordinate, unless you are all estate, you end up having to try to coordinate purchases with other winemakers to split up blocks so you can get your 5 tons of Cab Sauv or your 8 tons of Riesling or whatever it is that you're trying to do. It's just not as easy as if you can just take a vineyard block from somebody and take all 20 tons. Thankfully here at Maverick, we've actually got control over around 30 acres of vineyard. We're currently selling fruit to a couple of other estates right now. That's sort of in the short term. But in terms of winemaking, again, the jobs just differentiate based on the scale. Like, instead of having one 10-ton press at Tinhorn, I've got 2 1.5-ton presses here. It just ends up being a little bit more work, but you're just scaling things down. Mm-hmm. So
here's a follow-up question. This is something that I like asking winemakers. If you were given sort of the hypothetical, right? You open an old bottle of wine, a genie comes out and he says, okay, you've got two choices. You can work at the most technologically advanced winery with all the bells and whistles, all the gadgets. You've got a full team, but you can never come into physical contact with the wine. Okay, so you've got all the data, all the
reporting.
Are we
in Israel? Like, is this a kosher winery? It sounds like what they have to do
exactly
over there.
Yeah. Hands off, you can't. Okay. You're in your hermetic cell, you've got all your data. Or you have to make the wine without any data, without any feedback, nothing but hands-on.
Sensory.
Yeah, exactly.
Hands down sensory. I do a lot of data and I try to run a lot of analysis, but 99% of the decisions that I make are all done on sensory anyways. And I'm fortunate because I've, been at this for 15 years or so now. And you can start to gauge what the numbers actually are just by smelling and tasting. So mm-hmm. I don't have a super sensitive nose for volatile acidities, but I know once I start seeing it, it's probably minimum 0.35. If it starts to get somewhere where I you know, kind of like it, say for Pinot Noir, then we're closer to 0.6 to 0.8. If it gets beyond that, then you know it's going to start to be an issue. So stuff like that, you can operate very effectively just by using your taste buds and your sensory, and definitely prefer to do that than the hermetic seal technique. But I do like analysis. Like I still study enology all the time. I read papers. I do SRED, government research, all the time, and plan on doing that here at Maverick as well. So that kind of part of it is never really ends. Your brain only has a certain capacity to retain so much information, and the more you try and jam in there, you're going to lose something else. And you know, when it comes to harvest again, you need to relearn your harvest chemistry and those kinds of things. But in the springtime, you need to relearn your viticultural techniques and re-understand your soil profiles and your plant analysis. So
always playing it by ear, right? In terms of technology advances, things like that, is there anything that that's kind of exciting you right now?
The last two vintages at Tinhorn, we started getting into a lot more tannin analysis. One thing that I'd always kind of found with the wines at Tinhorn, with the vineyards predominantly being on the black sage side higher up where it is pure sand, no matter how long we were extracting the wines, you could never really make an overly tannic wine from the fruit on that side. The Maverick side here on the Golden Mile, we're a little just a bit further south where it's a lot more rocky. You see noticeably more astringent wines or tannic wines. They have a lot more texture, a lot more power. So from a winemaking perspective, definitely something that I'll have to be a lot more aware of when we're making the wines here. We have bought at Tinhorn, we did buy a lot of fruit down this side, and it was always very impressive. So the nice thing about working at bigger wineries, you do get to see vineyards from all across the South Okanagan. And but yeah, tannin analysis has always been a big one for me, just because it can heavily influence your style of wine. And it's just also kind of something that's a little bit new. Also, you know, having worked in the Okanagan for the last 6+ years, you also have smoke taint issues that are also kind of really sort of fascinating. How each vintage has changed, how the smoke taint issues can come on board. I don't know if it's a sort of taboo conversation, but it's the reality of a lot of winemakers up and down the valley. And as sort of some of the 18 start to come out, we're starting to see a little bits and pieces from that vintage, which sort of blew my theory of proximity of the fire to the vineyard being probably the most critical, whereas 18 was just kind of the big long haze. So yeah, those are probably the two more fascinating facets of wine chemistry. Now, you know, a big part for me, having Andrew Moon at Tinhorn forever as the viticulturist, now I'm running the vineyards here myself. So that's probably going to be the next big step for me, is to getting not only a handle on the vineyards here, but start to dig into the viticultural chemistry and biology that exists here. So
are you excited about that? Are you excited to do more in the vineyard?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. To now have the sort of the full role of viticulture and enology and sort of the all-encompassing Vigneron, it's a really exciting opportunity for me to really have, from winter pruning all the way through to finished bottle product, all under one person's watchful eye, I guess.
So there's wineries upon wineries in the Okanagan, and in BC, I should say. It's not just the Okanagan, but what was it about Maverick that appealed to you?
I think it was important for us to certainly find something that was the right size and in the right sort of, I guess, position in its history or life cycle of a brand and a business. You know, Bertus has been at this project for about a decade now, so it's still new, and it's kind of small enough that although it has a lot of loyal fans, growth is not going to hurt it, and it just really allows more people to learn about the brand and the winery itself.
Greater
and
exposure,
the
vineyards. Right?
And yeah, exactly. So it seemed to fit tick a lot of boxes for us. Also, to be honest, you know, Jen and I aren't coming out here from other industries where we've got boatloads of cash to sink into it, you know. So it was in the right budget, let's just say. And something that we could actually work on together. So yeah, it really has kind of come together. And obviously, to be honest, the most important part was Jan liked the branding and I liked the wines and the vineyard sites. And those were kind of the two key things for us. So
there was a big crossover in the Venn diagram, right?
You got it. Yeah. Yeah. The bullseye in the middle was great potential and great history. So
you and Jan, did you guys meet each other at Tin Horn Creek?
Yeah, exactly. So I started at Tin Horn back in 14. I think Jan came over late 15 or early 16. As soon as sort of Jan made it to Tin Horn, that's kind of when I felt that that winery hit its stride. And then it was only about 2 years later that it was sold to Andrew Peller. And we wanted to probably move out of there and start doing our own thing. It just, to be honest, just to own our own winery is been a lifelong dream for both of us, and and so we had the opportunity to get a partner to help us out with that.
So you'd been talking about it for a couple of years?
Yeah, I would say almost 2 years ago. There's a ton of wineries technically for sale at the right price in the Okanagan. There are very few successful mid to small size wine brand businesses out there, and I think the Albertines had been looking to sell it for probably around a year. I don't want to speak for them, but they were looking to getting to meet Bertus's wife Elzan at a barbecue with all the previous owners and new owners a couple of weeks ago. She was very excited to have her husband back, and he seems very excited to get to spend time with his two daughters. He was doing pretty much everything here on his own. There is some great employees that we obviously got to bring over with the sale of the business, but he definitely was trying to do a lot of things.
Notorious for juggling a lot of balls at the same time.
Yeah, and just, you know, by Jan and I being partners, him being more of the financial sales marketing side and me being more the operational vineyard winemaking side, we've immediately broken what he was trying to do all as one guy into two people doing that. So Maverick, had been on the market for around a year or so. But yeah, there's plenty out there. There's other people aspiring to buy wineries.
Oh, yeah.
Just make sure you've got somebody who can run some numbers for you to make sure you can actually pay for it in a lifetime.
Yeah, kind of the unspoken rule behind a winery is that it doesn't matter how good your winemaker is or how good the vines are if you don't know how to balance a budget.
Yeah, well, I haven't been in the Okanagan for that long, but I've seen quite a few wineries come and go already. Mm. Yeah, you kind of got to know what you're doing, which is hopefully what...
Crossfingers.
What we're up to, yeah.
You've got Jan for that, right?
Exactly. I can blame somebody else for it.
So you said that you like the wines of Maverick. If I can put you on the spot, what's one of your favorites from the lineup?
With wine, it's always tough because it depends on, almost 30 degrees.
It's contextual.
Yeah, 11 o'clock in the morning here today. Mm-hmm. You know, if I had to open a wine right now, I'd probably have our Sauvignon Blanc. It's one of the best in the valley, hands down. It's something Bertus has always done really well, whether it's the Calliope stuff that he was starting over at Brewing Owl or his own stuff here. But yeah, I mean, midsummer drink, something refreshing like that would go really, really well.
How do you like some of the specialty wines that Maverick does, the sparkling program, the port?
Yeah, that's probably going to be the biggest challenge for me, to be honest. We've done some sparkling wine at Tin Horn, but we never had a consistent program. And so yeah, now I've inherited a very intensive sparkling program. Currently has four separate sparkling wines.
Sparkling wine does not make itself.
No, it does not. Definitely not. And everything here is done excruciatingly by hand. Yeah,
hand so
hand labeled, hand corked, hand caged, hand riddled, like everything. Every bottle probably gets, you know, manhandled probably seven times minimum before it's finally taped up in the box and sent down to the tasting room or shipped off. So yeah, got my physical work cut out for me with the sparkling program as well. But it's kind of the, you know, I think as a winemaker, it really is the biggest technical challenge to really nail. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I very much look forward to continuing on with it. Whether or not we keep all four different products is a good question. But one of the great things about Maverick and the purchase was we purchased all the sparkling inventory going back to 2013.
It's fantastic.
So we have a bunch of beautiful old material in bottle in our warehouse now to continue on with vintage products, non-vintage products, all of which have been really, really well received and are really quite delicious too. So yeah, it's going to be fun. Fortifieds, I love drinking fortified wines, so I'm pretty excited about getting involved with that too. Again, kind of coming back to one of your earlier questions about what are some of the things that interest me. Tannin management definitely interests me quite a lot. So seeing how ethanol added directly to a ferment will impact the tannin profile is going to be pretty fascinating. So very much looking forward to working with that product as well.
Well, that's great. Yeah. Do you anticipate for fans, for customers of Maverick, are they going to see any immediate changes, or is it mostly going to be business as usual for the next year or two?
I think the ideal would be to sort of retain a lot of the stuff that we know is quite unique, and stylistically some of the stuff that everyone's really appreciated from Bertus's winemaking. Particularly, I think the white wines have a really beautiful purity. They're very, you know, aromatically intense. They're all done in that sort of very fresh aromatic style. What we'll probably see is, if we do add some wines to that side of the business, it will likely be something like an aged Chardonnay, something that you can open in, you know, Thanksgiving as well as in the summer. So something that's gone through a bit of mallow, something a bit more textured. And people will notice the wine styles as they evolved with my work at Tinhorn. We still retained the Gewürztraminer and the Pinot Gris in a very fresh and aromatic style, but we introduced a reserve Chardonnay that was 18 months in barrel and single vineyard and stuff like that. So I think you might see some of those products get introduced over time. We didn't have a rosé, so we quickly switched gears from a red sparkling base and made a rosé. So that'll be coming out, and we just bottled it on Tuesday. So got to get it through VQA, and it'll be out in the shelves pretty soon, too.
Always welcome.
No, I think there's going to be a natural evolution. I'm not Bertus. I don't have the same palate that he does, so it'd be almost near impossible, I think, to say that I could emulate the styles that he does. But definitely out of appreciation and respect for those styles, definitely looking to try to retain a lot of them. Yeah, I'm just really excited to work with the four new vineyard sites that we've got, particularly the estate here. We're right at the base of Mount Kobau here, and it is a beautiful property, super rocky terroir, you know, lots of granite. Going to be a really fun project, and looking forward to the challenges and the pleasures of ownership, having an estate. Yeah, it's going to be great.
Perfect. If you were going to go to any other winery here in the area and you were going to buy a bottle of wine for yourself, where would you go? What would you buy?
Good question. I do like the work that they're doing over at Phantom, for sure. Yeah, I've been able to catch up with Francis over there a few times and chat about organic and sustainable viticulture. And I, to be honest, one of my favorite wineries in the world is Humbrecht. So yeah, anytime I get to try wines where Olivier Humbrecht is the consultant on, I'm going to be pretty stoked to see what they look like, particularly in a site that's not exactly Alsace, but we've got some similarities here. Who else do I really like? Yeah, Jean-Marc's work up at Coleman has always been one of my favorites. Man, there's lots. Everyone's got some great wines down here. It's just a matter of going out there and tasting and hunting them down, and just encourage everyone that is listening to come and have a look around. You can get into all the tasting rooms and sit down and have a really informative tasting with some great, great people, and try the wines yourself and see what you like.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
Well, thank you all today for listening to Uncork the Sun with me and with Andrew Windsor. It's fun for me to listen to it now and remember how beautiful the spring was in the Okanagan 2 months ago. If you are yourself planning a trip to the Okanagan, want to find out what wineries are open, learn where to go, if you ever need to know something about a winery in Oliver or Osoyoos, the place to go is www.oliverosoyoos.com. Our next virtual Vinstitute live stream wine tasting is coming up in just a couple days. On Tuesday, August 18th at 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific Time, you can tune into the Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country Facebook page and learn a little bit about the absolutely fascinating topic of Rhone Valley white wines. Viognier, Marsan, Roussan, some of my absolute favorites. To post about this show or about the live tastings, use the hashtag UncorkTheSun. This podcast is a collaboration between Oliver Osoyoos Wine Country and the Vinstitute Wine School, and is released on Friday of every second week. If you have any questions about wine or winemaking, feel free to email me at moss@vinstitute.ca. The music for this episode was provided by Olav. To hear more of his work, visit olav.bandcamp.com. The host has been me, Moss Sherkogel, wishing so badly that I still had a bottle of the Maverick sparkling red wine. Although I am very excited to try that still rosé. I'll ponder that more off air. Whether you are experiencing the beauty of Oliver Assoy's wine country from the comfort of your home, or whether you are planning a trip there for the future, we cannot wait to raise a glass with you and uncork the sun together.